kind of guys who'd make you feel like that. Oh no!
Hello and welcome to Today in Digital Education, episode number 111. With me, Doug Balshaw, in my car, and Di Barnes in his car. Now, Di's obviously not here with me, so I'm just going to kick off this podcast. It's going to be a bit different this week, this time, because we're meeting each other in person in the Lake District, which is to the northwest of England. And the reason we're meeting is Di is on half term. I take Fridays off, usually to either do consultancy work or do my own thing. And we're going to go walking. We're going to go walk up some mountains. So I thought we'd actually do a multi-stage podcast. We're probably not going to sit down for 2 hours together and record anything, but this is the start, and I'm going to press pause here, and then next time you hear my voice, I should be with Di. So here we are walking along the path. That sound you can hear is the squelch of Di's unshod feet. How are you doing, Di?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you.
So here Doug and I are on the mountains-ish, walking up the hills. So it should be a lovely day. The weather looks nice, I think.
Yeah, so about 2.5 hour drive for me up and a bit longer for Di. How long was it?
3 hours I've done. Stopped at the Lama Karma Cafe for a little bit of breakfast, which was very nice. Yeah, it was good. I've used Waze to get here. So we used different apps, didn't we? So you shared your location on Google Maps.
Yeah, so recently I've noticed there's a little thing on Google Maps that allows you to share your location, and you can share it until you arrive at your destination. So I've used it with my wife before, so she knows kind of what time she can expect me, that I'm not just, you know, poodling along. So I shared it with Di, and Di did the same. But then when I tried to see Di's location, it said I had to stop my navigation to see where he was, but that made no sense to me.
That's no good when you're in the car, is it? So I was using Waze, with W-A-Z-E, which is a sort of crowdsourced location app, and it was kind of cool. It's really good. It's more detailed than Google Maps when you're driving along, which I really like. But it's but you said it was left me an audio message saying it's owned by Google, which indeed it is. So I looked it up, and it is owned by Google. And
it's because it was an Israeli startup.
That's right. Yeah, it was, they did it for Israeli, and it's this whole idea about crowdsourced information. And some people at the Israeli Technology Institute or something, they faked a traffic jam.
What?
Because it's crowdsourced data, they went out deliberately to go and set it up like there's a traffic jam, like there's too much traffic there, so they were able to influence Waze's directions by making out that there's loads of traffic that wasn't there.
So then Google would, or Waze would route you around that, I guess.
Exactly.
Okay.
So it's a little bit controversial. And there's also this thing that Waze have this agreement to give data to government and to use government data as well. So there's a sort of a little bit controversial in that regard, is that your data, although it's very granular, you know, you've got speed limits and tells you your speed as you're going along, it's also sharing that data, which means that, you know, if you're speeding and whatever a little bit, it could be found out quite easily. It just shows you how much data these phones, these apps are collecting about you.
Well, it's like I said on a previous tide when there was that, I overheard the conversation in the barbers about the friend of the people who were talking getting his insurance cancelled because of Aviva's little black box seeing that he was going 75 and a 60 or something. Like, yeah, his insurance, exactly. It wasn't the police or the government, it was his insurer.
Yeah, but you wonder, so you've got China going with their full smart city social credit thing, but I kind of think the data that's going to get collected about us is data of our activities in that sort of way, rather than facial recognition. And there won't be a social credit system, I don't think, but there will be something, and this is the way that it's kind of going to penetrate our lives.
Well, I don't think it's going to be so obvious, maybe in Western societies. I think in, like, China, they can gone full-on kind of totalitarian, but in Western societies it's going to be like what we're talking about with the Apple Watch doing electrocardiogram and then insurers saying, oh hey, let's use that for insurance data.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's not give them cover based on this. And when you, so if you've ever been if you're American, I imagine you possibly have experience of being in a dispute about medical insurance payments or medical payments when you're actually somebody's not very well. And I'm sure that in future, this data will be used in court to settle cases and things like that. And it won't go well necessarily for you, the individuals.
And people have already used Fitbit and Alexa data to prove that like they weren't at the scene of the crime. So like today, for example, if something happened to someone we know and we were under suspicion, we'd be able to prove, I don't know, using this audio recording of this babbling brook as we go past, and maybe the Google Maps data and the Waze data and stuff, that we actually weren't at the scene of the crime. I don't know.
I think that's it, isn't it? I think isn't there something about, so this guy who's been killed in the Saudi embassy in Israel, isn't there something about they're trying to say that they've got the recordings from his Apple Watch? So he didn't have his phone. He left his phone outside with his girlfriend, apparently. I haven't read this in detail, so please forgive me and do go look it up to verify what I'm saying. But they're saying that his watch recorded everything that was going on. So that's how they actually have an account of what it is. When truth being, it's probably likely that the Turkish government or the Turkish whatever secret services sort of thing had bugs in the embassy.
Oh right, okay. Probably. So they're pretending it's different kind of data.
So they have the evidence there, but the evidence is sort of inadmissible. So they're trying to find a lying way or whatever, getting it in and pretending it's his Apple Watch that is the culprit.
Oh, it's interesting times, anyway. So we're heading up a place called Dale Head. So Dale Head is near Borrowdale Youth Hostel, which is where we're going to be staying. I just arrived, like we said, we're heading up there. Dale Head, if you ever get a chance to go to the Lake District, I don't think, Di, you've never been up Dale Head?
No, it's the first time for me.
It's an amazing view. So you get up there, it's pretty windy, obviously, and you can see down the valley, and it's just such a splendid view. And it's often called, I think, the key to the Lake District, or the gateway to the lakes or something. And in fact, until the 19th century, this is historian Doug taking over now, until the 19th century, like, people didn't really appreciate the views here. It wasn't really a thing. It was just very much quite poor farmers and labourers and things, until people like Wordsworth came along and started talking about how beautiful it was. Then Victorian tourists flocked to the place. So hopefully I'll be able to capture Di's reaction when I get to the top. You'll hear some wind in the background, but that might be an hour or so. So obviously for you, it'll just be the next thing you hear. But for now, I'll stop there. So... Right, isn't it? Isn't it?
It's so beautiful, so beautiful.
So we're at the top of Dale Head. Di, the mountain goat Barnes, has strode?
Ascended the mountain.
Ascended the mountain, and we're now at the top of Dale Head. And it is a beautiful day, and the kind of the cloud pattern, and the sun's coming through. And
down the valley, the light through the valley, the green thing.
So I'm going to take a picture, and we'll stick this along with the show. You can probably hear the wind, obviously we're at the top of the mountain, so
it's very windy. It's lovely.
There's a cairn up here.
No clouds coming in behind us, but we've got to the top.
But there's no one around. Di's had a few strange looks on people in cars, and as we go past, they'd be like, what is this guy doing with no shoes on and boots?
But, nature's shoes, they say.
Nature's shoes, indeed. But we didn't take the straightest.
They are cold, by the way, just in case you're wondering.
I was wondering. So
they're okay.
So we didn't take the straightest route up this here mountain.
No, we got a little lost on the way. Doug's navigation was perfect. So it's always good to not quite know where you are.
Right, sometimes. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So my map skills are still work in progress, I would say. So we ended up taking a slightly circuitous route up to the top of Dale Head, but it's all good. And now we've got this beautiful view. And we'll record a bit more later on. All right, so we're now down from Dale Head. The mist has descended. In fact, if we were at the top now, we wouldn't be able to see anything. We've now just got a few sheep. What do you think, sheep? I'm pretty sure that's you, Di.
Pretty sure. So you have just shown me on your telephone the coded front end of MoodleNet.
Yeah, that's right. So I have been in Barcelona, as you would say if you're from the northeast, Barcelona. With my wife, and Outlandish, who I've mentioned before on this podcast, have been doing the front-end development. So for those of you who are less technical, you can break down a lot of the work that goes into an app like this into front-end development, back-end development, and UX. So the easy way to think about that is the design of it, and then the code that makes it, when you press a button, it does something. In the back end, like the databases and making sure it transmits the data properly, that kind of stuff. So the front end development's been done by Outlandish. I'm happy to share the thing that Dai's just seen. It's basically for the minimum viable product in January. It's what it'll look like on the desktop, and I thought it looks quite clean. I mean, it's not obviously really fancy because it's the first version, but I really like the colours. I really like the simplicity.
I agree. So it looks very simple, straightforward, follows logics that pick up on other major services, I think. So left-hand side, two sidebars and content in the middle. It's all good.
And the fact that it's orange, obviously, because of Moodle, reminds me of an article that I very quickly read before we left. So I got back from Barcelona last night. We're recording this on Friday at the moment. I got back from Barcelona last night, left this morning for the Lake District, and wrote some stuff for Thought Chapel. One of the things I didn't write about, but which I kind of skim read, was some stuff from Amber Case. And Amber Case is someone who we've mentioned before on Tide. She works around calm technologies. So we often complain, I think, as a society about how invasive things like messaging services can be. And the example she gives at the top of the article is that Facebook Messenger asks you 4 times when you sign up if you'll turn on notifications. Because obviously it's a big deal that you know that there's someone message you and you respond, that kind of thing. But she has come up with this kind of quiz, this test. I don't think you've seen this, have you, Dai?
I've not seen this, mate.
Okay. But I've only skimmed it, and I'll have to go back and maybe look in a bit more detail. But it says things like everything from the colour scheme to whether your interface is a touchscreen or physical buttons. Because it's not just for apps, it's for like, oh, I don't know. When I drove over here this morning, my Volvo car has a completely software-based display. But it doesn't feel like that. It feels like almost a mechanical thing. And it's very, I would say that's very calming in a way. But she talks about colour schemes, orange being one of the calming colours, which is good. And some other things.
Green is another calming colour, but I can't think of any service that uses green in it.
WhatsApp
uses green. Okay, I'll shut up. I use it all the time.
But yeah, lots of services are blue.
They are.
Which is actually a bad colour, because blue light, especially late at night, is not good for helping you get to sleep.
Yes, and that's a fair point, isn't it? It makes you wonder if the people who have made these products had done their research.
Indeed. So it's funny that a lot of services on the internet are blue. Don't know why that is. Maybe blue's a conservative.
Someone once told me that if you go for an interview for a job you want to get, obviously you wear a navy blue suit.
Standard.
Really?
Mm-hmm. They said it influences that way as well. Oh, so right. Maybe it's something to do with confidence and success or something like that in some way.
There was a hilarious episode of Motherland. Have you seen Motherland?
I don't think I have.
I've mentioned this before, though, right?
No. I can't remember. You say a lot of things.
Quote of the day. So there's a series which is currently being removed from BBC iPlayer because it's been on there for now a year, I guess. It's called Motherland, and it was a short series of 6 programmes. And it's hilarious, especially if you've got young kids, because it's basically what mothers are like. Around their children and all of the politics and stuff around there, including the stay-at-home dad. I forgot why I was going there. Why was I going there?
I don't know.
It was a bit of a random aside.
We went from blues.
Blues. Oh, interviews, right?
Yes.
So the stay-at-home dad, all of a sudden, is not going to be a stay-at-home dad. He's going to go and get a job. And he decides he doesn't really want a job. He wants to remain a stay-at-home dad. So he asks, what can he do? Because he keeps getting interviews. What can he do to not get the job? And one of the other mothers just says, oh, I've had to do that loads of times. Just wink at them. Just wink at them all the time. So you see him in the interview. You see him in the interview winking uncontrollably at this person. Lo and behold, he doesn't get the job. I don't know why that reminded me, but there we are.
So, wear a blue suit and don't wink if you want the job.
Yes.
Okay.
Winking is no good. Is that right?
I never wink. So when people wink at me, I get really concerned.
Really?
I don't have to say, yeah. I'm not going to tell you what Doug just did.
Nice.
And so I always have to hold, like, call them on it. I say, did you just wink at me? Because I don't really know what it means. like, I understand what a wink is, but I don't know. It's just like people don't do it anymore.
My wife and I wink at each other all the time.
Do you?
It's usually a conspiratorial wink, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's usually a, like, look at this idiot. Or, yes. Like, remember when we were talking about a thing and that person's now doing it?
Yes, absolutely. So, and it's that thing of a meeting of minds across a room sort of thing, where you go, wink, we'll communicate. I know what you're thinking, you know what I'm thinking.
Absolutely. I think we might have gone the wrong way, Ty.
No.
We might...
walking around the bottom of that hill, though?
Which hill?
That one.
Listener...
There's a road here, we're just going to go on the road.
Right,
We're fine.
We're good, okay,
Yeah, we can carry on. So we have calm technology. I like the idea of calm technology, the principle of actually researching technology that is soothing to use. But potentially that might reinforce people using their technology more for more than just the purposes they needed, or it causing reactions in them that they enjoy, like a dopamine release sort of thing, or whatever the calm drug is. I don't know what that is, really. And
oxytocin.
Or maybe a bit of that, yeah. And
MDA, no, MDMA.
MDMA.
let's not go there. I wouldn't know. And now we can't open the gate. There we go. It's fascinating podcast radio going on here. There we go. It's like a field recording. There we go. It's a bit
we
like...
We always shut the gate behind us.
My wife said it's... Because I said we might do this. She said, it'll just sound like you're recording Countryfile.
That's what it sounds like.
Countryfile, for those who aren't based in the UK, is like a very farmer-like program, which is on at like 4 a.m. or something.
It's a very good show. I'm sure people who live in the country love it.
Yes, that's true. Where was I going? So the difficulty is, like, how do you get people to adopt calm technologies, right? Because on the one hand, you want to respect the user, you want to implement all these things. But if you're in a competitive marketplace, like a social network or some kind of platform, if you don't remind people and notify people and nag them, maybe they're not going to use your platform as much as someone else's. Maybe they'll forget about it. Maybe they'll go, like, maybe they'll switch to something else. So usually I would say it takes a leader in a field to do something. So I'm thinking...
Countryfile. You're thinking Countryfile again, aren't you? A leader in a field.
A
black sheep. I don't know. Something
like black sheep of the market. No, I'm thinking something like Apple doing something and everyone copying.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll tell you. So let's turn this on its head a little bit, right?
We're not supposed to be going this way, by the way.
Amber Cave. I'm sure there aren't going to be... Oh.
But see? Right, that way.
That way. You sure? Because that's not going to take us around... There's all that take us around the bottom of the mountain. That was the one on the map. Maybe there's a path left.
We're going to have to just pause this 2 seconds. Sorry.
That's what I thought.
Right, so do we know where we're going now?
Yeah, Hawes. We're going to Hawes Gate, actually.
Sounds amazing.
It does, doesn't it? So there's a signpost, and we've seen it on the map and everything. All the Hawes are there.
Right.
H-A-U-S-E. H-A-U-S-E. I don't know how else to pronounce it.
I don't know what you're talking about other than that.
Okay.
So you've had some thoughts?
So let's take the idea of calm technology and turn it to our head a little bit, okay? So really what we want... So phones are fabulous, okay? We know that. They are... The genitals of the tech world.
Hang on a minute.
Sorry?
What?
Okay, we've done... Right, so a phone, 16.5 million colours delivered to you in high-density screen, high-definition screen, whatever, that respond to the immediate touch of your fingers.
Can I just say that Ben's my son. Di is huffing and puffing because he's walking up a hill, not because he's excited about the topic of conversation.
That's correct. And so the... Yes, so what we're doing, we're turning that on. Yes, so the things that react to you in your life are very few and far between in such a way as your phone does. Your phone is all set up just for you.
Right, I think everyone can read, right, yep. Everyone can read, like, connect the dots there, right. I understand. Okay.
Thank you very much. So if we take the idea that discouraging people from using their phones, so that you only use your phone for a necessary purpose, is important, we value that. So the idea of building calm technology in is, in one way, good, but also you could say it another way as encouraging people to use technology services that they don't really need to because they're calming. And so let's go for the opposite of that. Let's flip that over. Instead of having a centre for the research of calm technology development, let's have a centre for the research of hostile technology development. Okay. So if we were to do such a thing, things would... So this is a bit like when you can turn your screen to black and white so that it becomes less inviting.
Yeah.
It's the same sort of principle as that. Things that were... That are... Where the apps remind you that you've done what you came to do and you should just get out of Dodge and do something more interesting instead.
Okay.
Use garish colours that sit uncomfortably in your...
I was reading someone who was saying that every time they go to their phone, they say out loud...
You said that you've done this. You
have
said
I?
This to me. I've quoted you on this to other people.
Right.
I have a friend that does this.
Right. No, I don't do it myself. Okay. I've read about it. But basically, the idea is that when you go to your phone, you say out loud, or to yourself at least, what it is that you're going onto the phone to do. Because otherwise, very easy to unlock phones these days, fingerprint unlock, face unlock, whatever. Straight in, you've got notifications, you just check email, whatever, and you forget what you're doing. Lo and behold, 10 minutes goes by.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I find myself... So I have a morning routine which involves my phone enormously, catching up on the news and notifications and such like. But then I also go and check X amount of services. And there's this thing where you feel like, have I checked them all? Have I done everything? No, there must be something else. And you go back on it and you check it again. And you go back on it and you go and look for the things you've kind of forgotten because there's so much shit on there that you need to look through. And I don't know, it's a little bit weird. So anything that can actually help you manage that, I think is a good thing.
Well, I think also maybe it's got to do with your personality, your context, your home context, your work context, that kind of thing. Because last week it was well-being week at Moodle. And so it was a really interesting thing, and maybe another time I'll talk more about that in a general sense. But people were talking about what they do to make sure that they're like okay and they can manage their work, so like work-life balance, that kind of stuff. Uh-huh. And a couple of people at Moodle don't have Telegram, which is what we use as almost like an equivalent of Slack, like a back channel kind of thing. They don't have Slack on their... Sorry, don't have Telegram on their phone. They don't have email on their phone. And so it's easy for them to switch off at the weekends, whatever. They might install it when they go to a conference or similar. And other people responded saying, oh, it's interesting because I'm kind of the opposite. So instead of having like a... And this was a remote worker like me, saying, well, actually, I really appreciate having Telegram on my phone and email on my phone because often my working day is really in the morning until very late at night, but not very intense and spread out over long periods of time. And so it means that I can be in a line for paying for something at a supermarket and I can be replying to people on Telegram or whatever it is. And I just thought that actually, like a one-size-fits-all approach to quote-unquote calm technologies might not actually pay attention to different work, home, or cultural contexts.
Work, home, or cultural context. Yes, I think that's absolutely right. And I think so. I work in a boarding school, which is quite immersive. It takes a lot of my time, and I appreciate... I'm a smoker, so I'm always finding myself with pockets of 5 minutes and this, that, and the other, and checking my phone and getting some things off my desk during that time is really, really important. It's a valuable thing for me, but equally, I find, it can also put you in a place where you're receiving communications you might not want to receive at a time you don't want them. And that's frustrating, but I guess you can manage that sort of thing better if...
Well, there's a couple of things I was going to mention. So my phone, which is a OnePlus 5, yours is a OnePlus...
5 as well.
Right, yes. You've got the same as me then, you've got the gaming mode.
Yes, I've never used it. What is it?
So gaming mode, basically, if you imagine you're playing a game on your phone, you don't want to you don't want to accidentally press on a notification or
come on the screen and block a bit of the play or whatever.
Right, or accidentally go out of the game when you're in the middle of playing or whatever. So it basically blocks, it's like airplane mode, but with everything still turned on, if you see what I mean. Uh-huh. So there's that, which is quite useful. But also, in terms of little pockets of time, like you say, I'm not a smoker, but I am distracted by lots of things on my phone. And I'm learning Spanish at the moment on Duolingo. And one of the things... Sorry?
Sí.
Sí, yes. And one of the things you can, as it's loading on Duolingo, it says that you can learn a language in 15 minutes a day on Duolingo. What does 15 minutes of Instagram do for you? And which I think is very clever.
Yeah.
And it does make me, if I've got a spare minute, I do often just go on Duolingo, which is obviously good for me, rather than endlessly scrolling through Twitter.
Absolutely, I agree. Although Twitter can have its serendipity as well, but it's what the hell is it? Is this some kind of waterfall we've arrived at?
It's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Yes. So Twitter is just an example of a bottomless app. You could endlessly scroll, like Pinterest, Instagram, whatever. But actually, Duolingo, if you've got a little pocket of time...
Works well.
It does work well.
Yeah. It's a good idea. Right.
Onwards and upwards.
Yes, off we go. Hill climbing.
Right, so that was interesting, Di. We had a bit of a scramble there, I guess.
Oh, we've had a massive scramble. So we've gone away probably wrong and...
It was the sheepfold shortcut.
The sheepfold shortcut we have taken.
It was a detour, not a mistake.
If ever you're up here, I recommend you take it. It was just such a wonderful exertion of energy.
It was fun. I mean, it must have been almost vertical, and...
I nearly died.
Yep. Yep.
That's all I'm saying. I could hardly get up the hill. It was ridiculous.
I decided to phone my wife, tell her that we weren't dead. My daughter answered the phone, and she said, "Daddy, you sound out of breath. Are you climbing a mountain right now?" And I said, "Yes, Grace, I am." And she laughed.
We were, indeed. She laughed. We were breathing heavily. It was hard work.
So
anyway, got up the mountain.
Got the mountain. Yes. And we're now walking down, and it's not so windy anymore. They probably might hear a bit of wind. And we've been talking about, because this is what we do when we go walking, we've been talking about free and open source software and the Disroot app, which came out last week. And we stopped while Di remembered what the app was called and had a fascinating few minutes while Di managed to open all of the apps on his phone and explain what they all meant.
I did. So I've taken the buttons off my phone and I then have to come up with gestures. The gesture I haven't perfected is how to open your entire list of apps. Mm. So and I couldn't remember what it was called, so I couldn't search for it. So anyway,
I suggested the middle finger gesture, but apparently that didn't work.
So, the app's called Disroot, anyway.
So, D-I-S-R-O-O-T, which, if you look it up on your favourite search engine, means the act of pulling up, like, from the ground, like, taking something out by its roots. And the thing which it's taking out by its roots is, I guess, cloud services.
Yes, so it's, so basically what it does, it recommends loads of apps to you. You have a choice of mail apps or search apps or search apps, for example.
But it's not just recommending apps. I mean, it provides services behind that, right? So it provides Nextcloud, for example. Nextcloud does cloud storage and sync and calendar and contact syncing, so it allows you to stop using some of the Google services. And then the Disroot app, when you press on, for example, mail to access your Disroot mail, it would then pop up not with just a Disroot app, because they provide an app to take you to other apps, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'd love to tell you about the terrain that we are climbing down.
As we're talking about that.
Exactly, we're just sort of balancing between rocks. So it does that, and it's quite a good way. So it automatically takes you to F-Droid, which is a sort of Play Store alternative for Android, and lets you authorize the source and then it installs the app and you can have a look at it and see what you think, and it's a way of looking at alternatives. But an interesting thing that I remember that I was going to talk about last time we were recording, but I forgot, and this is over an hour ago now. And it's that Google have just said that they're going to charge for their basic apps.
So they're
gonna, so big news, hey, in little China.
But not search, like,
yeah. So because of the $5 billion dollar fine by the GDPR people, they are going to, I don't know how much it's going to be, they're just saying this is what our response to it is going to be, is we have to look at how, because this is the core of our business model for advertising.
Do you feel like it's a threat or?
I don't know what it is. It's like, I guess they're looking at other tech companies, and I bet what they're doing actually is, in all of their legal dealings behind the scenes that we don't get to hear about, there must be discussions about, well, this GDPR thing, this is only in Europe, by the way, not in other countries, continents. They're going to, they're basically taking their bat and ball home and saying, I'm not playing.
I'd be very happy to pay for Google stuff.
Well, I think that's right.
I already do. For Dynamic Skills at my consultancy.
I pay for an installation because I demand terabytes of storage online. So all my stuff is backed up online in my private installation as well of Google Apps. So it'll be interesting to see how much they're going to charge and what that is, and whether they're just like spitting their dummy out, or whether they are actually going to follow through and charge for, say, Google Maps, or for using Google Search, or for using Gmail.
Well, they've already, Google Maps has an API, application programming interface, for those of you who don't know, allows you to get information in and out of services. So you've all been to websites that have Google Maps embedded, or apps which use Google Maps as their mapping function. People have to pay for that, and recently they've put the price of that up like 100%, not 100%, 100 times or something, like insane amounts, to the extent that small developers can't really use Google Maps anymore. And it's actually quite good for the open source community, in the sense that they're more likely to use OpenStreetMap and therefore have people pointing towards it. But yeah, I'm all for paying for apps like that instead of harvesting data.
Yeah, exactly. Upfront payments rather than the advertising model. So when you start to pay somebody for the service that they're providing for you, you can start to hold them accountable for how that service is used and what they do with your data in that way. Whereas when they're giving it away for free, you're always on a sort of thin ice when you're trying to say, well, stop using my data like this. And you're kind of saying, well, look, you're using our servers all of the bloody time to get what you want.
For free, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, for nothing. So we'll do what the hell we like with your behaviour. Anyway, so I think that could be quite exciting, and certainly things like Disroot are going to come more into the spotlight and get better developed.
Well, the interesting thing about Disroot is it's run by volunteers, and it's kind of a network of activists, really. And I would trust them based on their reputation, I'd say. But then again, to what extent do you trust what they're providing, and as to whether they can backdoor things? Now, stuff like Nextcloud is built so that it's entirely private, and it's built so that administrators can't see users' stuff by default unless it's configured otherwise. But again, you still really have to trust people that they haven't backdoored stuff. So I think the internet that we're going to see in future is going to be a lot more, instead of trusting big providers to just provide the stuff that we're used to, it's going to be a lot more deciding who that you're going to trust to provide your infrastructure and the stuff that you rely on every day, like email, calendar, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's a fair shout as well, because I think, like, one of the reasons that I use Google stuff at school and Microsoft stuff is that they are just awesome companies. Sorry, awesome products. And I want my community to be working with the best that there is to work with. And but if you start to have choices, so if Google actually went back to the idea that they're just damn good at this stuff, and that people would pay for it because it is that good, they'd be doing all right.
Yeah, and I think there needs some kind of wake-up call like GDPR, because GDPR applies to anyone, whether you're an incumbent or a startup.
Yeah.
And so it's not like a startup can come along and start providing services based on data mining to then compete with Google, because that's outlawed under GDPR. So it's providing a fair, equitable, privacy respecting playing field for everyone, which I think is long overdue.
I think that's right. And I think I saw something interesting, infographic the other day about iPhones. So the new iPhones, it showed the cost of what all the materials are and putting them together. And the cost of building an iPhone is 30% of its selling value.
Wow.
30%. So there's 70% markup on that device, which is not the case for other bits of tech. It's not the margin that you make on hardware.
No.
So it's if you think about us, we use OnePlus phones. We pay about just over 500 quid for them, or around that amount. And that's why they are benchmarked nearly at the same pace as iPhone X, for example.
I think that there's some interesting stuff here to compare about the Apple ecosystem, maybe, and the Apple Store and the service and everything like that. But I still think there's a Apple tax on top of that, I have to say.
No, I think that's absolutely right. And I think Google will be looking at Apple and Apple's business model to understand, where the f*** are we? Is this the right way? We're going uphill again. Sorry.
I'm going to have to edit that bit out. Okay. Die Barnes. The reason for explicit content on the App Store.
Yeah, that's the way it works.
I now can't unlock the phone because it's
the water.
Freaking fingerprint. Oh.
Are we in the right... Is this the path, you think?
We're going up.
All right, it's day two. It's that light rain that soaks you through. We're at Honister Slate Mine. Just look around the shop. Do you find anything inspiring there, Di?
I didn't know. It was some nice slate, but I like it when it's used for structural work, mostly, I think, rather than just the sort of silly little trinkets that they make putting around your house.
Fair enough. So we're heading up the mountains next to there. What's the name of the place we're heading up? Great Gable. Is that the one?
Yeah, yes. Somewhere around there.
Great Gable. So I've learned a lot about Di during this trip so far. I've learned that he is actually as hardcore as he makes out to be in terms of being barefoot. So only putting on the thinnest of sandals for when it was pitch black last night on our way back. And also the fact that he talks even more than I do in his sleep.
I do that, yes.
And whereas people tell me that I just mutter incoherent, like, sounds, Di is very eloquent.
I talk about what's going on in my head, obviously. I've no idea. It's a little bit exposing, shall we say.
Well, you didn't say anything which was, which would compromise you, I would say. But you were very eloquent, I have to say, in your sleep last night. Absolutely. So we were staying in a dorm room, but there was only us two in it, so very good, very civilised.
It was, very nice. Yeah, a lovely youth hostel down at, what's it called, Borrowdale?
Yes.
Very nice.
So yeah, we'll check in later on. So we're now covered in our waterproofs.
We are. It is not pissing down, it's just there's rain and the wind is so strong. I'm soaked. I haven't got any waterproof trousers, so I've got wet everything downstairs.
Interesting. So we've decided not to go up Great Gable because we can't see the top. Well, no, we can't see the top of it. And it's windy kind of at 400 meters. So at 899, it's going to be blowing us off the side of the mountain. But we've just been having a conversation about Instagram stories. Instagram isn't something I use, but Di does. And last night you were showing me the Instagram stories and you use it specifically for newspapers and stuff.
Yeah? I do, yeah. So for like part of my feeds that I read, so I obviously follow them on Instagram and look at what they're doing, but then I follow five newspapers and they will just pop around their different articles in different ways. So what I get from that is a sort of comparison across the reputable newspapers of their different headlines and which topics, which articles they are prioritising in one day. And it's quite interesting to see how they do that. But so, and then you just swipe up and you can read the actual whole article. But that includes lots of advertising in the articles, no matter which paper you're using. And so that's all a bit strange. And then you have The Guardian does this weird thing where they've got this young, funky woman doing fake or real news. And you get to, it's like a quiz that you have to do. So they present a story and they say, is it fake or real? And you have to guess, and then they tell you what it is afterwards. You don't have to guess. It will just scroll onto the next screen. It's like a mock-up of an interactive thing, really. And but that's quite interesting. But but still, it all kind of leaves you at a superficial level of news consumption, where you're rarely in Instagram delving down into the deeper article. You're rarely sort of tempted to do that. You just kind of see it swiping by, and it keeps you up to date with the daily news. So it's quite cool. And I think there's more videos. So newspapers are making videos now, that sort of thing. And they're going to. It'll be interesting to see how they develop in the future and what sort of mediums they stick with. I think it's a little bit, it's aimed at young people because they have this perception that young people are using Instagram, I guess. And I guess they're probably doing the same on Snapchat as well. I haven't had a look. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. trying to present the news in a different way because they have all those media production. So if you're interviewing someone, so The Guardian, for example, recently did a video on knife crime of 15 minutes long. Well, that's really a television documentary, really, or getting there. And it's like, so what's going on in their minds as to how they're pushing the news forward? So are they just experimenting to see what takes hold and what draws traction? Or are they, are they exploring new business models? What is it that they're up to? And I thought that was quite interesting, really, just in the way that it's going. But
yes, on the one hand, you're quickly seeing the different biases of different newspapers, you know, in the way that they report news and the headlines.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if you don't delve any deeper, you feel like you know the news, but you actually don't know any more than the headlines.
Yeah, you don't know the actual information. Yeah. Because, and you're never kind of scrutinizing, you know, headlines are often misleading, or they're often a hook to try and get you to read an article, a bit like clickbait, but more, less deceptive, I'd say. And you don't ever learn any more than that. And it's important that you do the deep dive. So my most important access to news is through reading The Guardian in the morning on the app on my phone, which I pay for. And it's just an interesting thing. But it is good to keep a definite watch on how things are being presented. You know, like how Boris Johnson, for example, is presented across the different papers when he does something of great note. That kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Cool. Okay, well, onwards and upwards. We're going to go to, it's not Giant Haystacks, that was my grandma's favourite wrestler.
I like Big Daddy myself. But we're Haystack. We're going
we're going, going up Haystack. Haystack. It's just called Haystack. Right.
We're going to walk around.
Onwards.
Hello. Well, that was Tied Up the Mountain. It had very little structure. but you get to hear the wind, so the wind is cutting out the voice quite often. But it was such a pleasure to be able to spend some time with Doug. Mostly our relationship has been online, I guess, and so it was lovely to spend some quality time up and down the hills with him. So I'm doing the end of this. Well, some clarification. Tide. What did I say? I said something about Google charging for apps. I want to clarify this. This is only in Europe, and it's they're charging the mobile phone companies. So this is in response to the GDPR fining them for forcing their search tools and their browser onto companies that are using Android, and much like they did with Microsoft and Internet Explorer a few years ago. So that's clarification on that. Users will not be charged. What else? My legs feel like a rag doll's legs today. I'm going to see, it's the most beautiful day here in Oundle. The birds are tweeting, the sky is blue, so I think I'm going to try and go for a run and sort of fix my legs back to their normal self. No hills, no rain, no wind. Oh joy. So if you managed to listen to this, I hope you've enjoyed it. And it was a pleasure to spend some time up the hills with you, Doug. So fantastic. Cheers.
Now I'm just gonna sit at the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time.